Hi, welcome to Let's Talk Forex with Alison and Chris. So this week we've got a really exciting episode lined up. We're talking to Caroline Rundell, aka Trading Angel, on YouTube. She's a professional trader and a trading coach, and her own trading journey from beginner to professional is a really inspiring one. And she has some really excellent trading tips too. So please enjoy the episode. And if you have any questions, send them through to us at podcast@fxscouts.com or reach out to us on any of our social media channels. Hey, Chris, how's it going?
Hey, Alison. Yeah, I'm okay, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. I'm very excited about our podcast today.
Yes, as am I.
So we are very excited to introduce Caroline Rundell. I hope that's how I say your surname, Caroline.
That is how you say it, Caroline Rundell.
Rundell,
okay. Caroline has a YouTube channel and she is a trading coach, and her channel is called Trading Angel, or her company is called Trading Angel. And she's a successful Forex trader, and she helps traders start on their Forex trading journeys and helps them refine their strategies. And yeah, she has a very inspiring story. So I think you guys are, you know, in for a real treat today. So Caroline, you were born in Durban, South Africa. And so can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, I was born in Durban. My dad is actually South African. My mum is Scottish. They met in South Africa. And we moved to England when I was 3. So I didn't get much time in South Africa. But and then I moved to Holland when I was 6. So I lived in 3 different countries by the time I was 6 years old. But as my accent's English, if anyone asks, I just tell them I'm English.
Absolutely.
And have you been back to South Africa since?
I went back a couple times when I was a child, and I actually went back for the first time as an adult last year. Or was it the year before? 2022, I went back.
Wow. Where did you go?
We went for a safari it was about an hour away from Port Elizabeth, a place called Carriega. We then went to Plettenberg Bay.
Beautiful.
And to Cape Town. And yeah, I just went to a few different places.
And did it resonate with you as sort of part of your roots?
It was a crazy experience because when I first got there, I felt like I was in a foreign country. I felt very much like it wasn't my home.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the holiday, I'd seen so many little things that I had remembered as a child from my first memories, that by the end, I really felt like it was my home. It's a really strange feeling. But lots of little things that I don't remember remembering that came back to me.
Wow, that's a really powerful experience.
Yeah, it was it was a lot deeper than I thought it was going to be. I thought I was just going on safari.
But I mean, that part of the country also is just, it's spectacular. Hey? From Plets to Cape Town is just absolutely beautiful.
It's a really beautiful country. And everyone's so friendly.
Yeah. I don't know because it does, you know, we often get that sort of feedback. I was actually just, you moved when you were 3, and then when did you actually end up in Brighton? We were just chatting earlier, and you said that you've been there for 10 years now.
Yeah, so there was a lot in between that, but I moved to Brighton in 2014, so it's been almost exactly 10 years now.
And before you got into Forex trading, you were a journalist, is that correct?
Yeah, so my background isn't in finance. My background is in journalism. So I worked as a radio journalist, so I'd read the news bulletins at the local radio station here in Brighton. Right. Yeah, and then I moved into finance.
How did that happen? I mean, I'm just wondering. So you're reading a news bulletin, and
yeah,
was it from reading the financial news? I mean, how did the interest? Where did the interest come from?
There was a couple of places. So first of all, I was poor.
Yes, often one of the largest motivators for forex trading.
Yeah, I'd spent a lot of money studying and I guess trying to start up my career in journalism. I put a lot on credit cards when I was being an intern and doing apprenticeships. There was a lot of working for free. So I was then in this situation where I felt poor. And one of my really good friends, worked as a forex broker in London. So he was obviously at ICAP, so a big exchange. And yep. He was always the rich friend that bailed everyone else out. So
everybody needs one, right?
Everyone needs a rich friend, yeah. So I suppose I was inspired by that. And I would hear him talking about certain things. And I guess I felt like I knew enough from hearing him talk. Now I realize that that's ridiculous. And I knew nothing at all. But that was what kickstarted the journey. That's what kickstarted the interest.
Right. And was it a genuine interest? Or was it like, oh my gosh, I need money and this sounds like something I can do? Or was it something that sucked you in? Or is it something that sucked you in?
Really good question. Honestly, it started off about the money. Yeah. And it became a genuine interest. Mm-hmm. So now I will talk about it passionately. Mm-hmm. And I really am very interested. But when I first started, you know what? I wasn't good with money. I was putting things on credit card and I was interning for free. I was making a lot of stupid decisions around money. And I suppose I was scared to face it head on, because I think often people do get like that, you know, when they feel like they're not good at something, they're afraid to actually face it and put it right. I was the sort of person, I wouldn't even check my bank account because I was too afraid of what I mean.
No, incredibly common. It really is a common thing. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so that was me 10 years ago. And I think I realized, it became a genuine passion, and it became more about the learning side of it. And now I pride myself on being good at money.
A handy side effect of becoming a forex trader.
Yeah. I think I thought that was, you know, that was a likely outcome, wasn't it? If you start learning about something, you know, where attention goes, energy flows and all, whatever that one is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I thought that let's turn over a new leaf. Let's be good at finance.
And you mentioned, I mean, I was on your videos that you had your first forays into trading were a bit rocky. At first, I mean, and I think probably a lot of beginners will identify with that. How exactly did you start? I mean, where did you start and when did you start trading?
Oh my goodness, I was awful at the beginning. So bad. I'll tell you some funny stories about how awful I was, right? So first of all, I spoke to my friend, the one that was the broker, and I called him up before I placed my first trade. For some advice. So, you know, any advice I'm about to do, I'm going to place my first trade. What advice do you have? And he said, don't risk more than 5%, which actually turns out is a lot. Mm-hmm. You probably shouldn't have said that.
Caroline, I thought you were going to say, he was going to say, don't do it.
Do you know what he did say? He said, trading isn't easy, so go slow. And I was like, yeah, I'll be fine. Don't worry.
Right.
Just dived in head first. I thought that I needed to make my first trade with pounds. I needed to sell pounds because I thought I've only got pounds.
Oh, wow.
So I was asking him these weird questions, which didn't even make any sense. So I was like, so if I want yen, do I have to then sell pounds and buy US dollars and then buy, you know, do I have to do this? No, you can trade whatever you like.
Gosh, amazing. So really completely with no understanding, very innocent.
Yeah, and I placed my first trade with that little knowledge.
And how did that go?
I lost £2.
Yep. I mean, fair enough. It could have been worse.
It could have been a lot worse.
So did you study anything? I mean, did you like trade on a demo account? Did you do any of that groundwork, or did you literally like place a trade once you realized?
I did a tiny bit of groundwork. I wouldn't say that I did enough. I'm really lucky that it didn't go worse. I did a bit of reading. I read a beginner's book. I had a few conversations with my friend about it and certain things. And I spent one day on demo.
One day.
Which I do not recommend to other people. I was obviously overconfident.
Well, I mean, I imagine you lost that confidence fairly quickly.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, there were some devastating moments.
I mean, I don't want to drag you back to the devastation, but did you find the devastating moments useful in terms of motivation or learning, or did they make you want to quit?
You know what? There's a nice combination of the two. So there were times when I thought, you know what, this is impossible. What am I doing? This is clearly impossible. And then I would say that my biggest losses helped me make my biggest wins in the end. So my biggest losses made me realize that there was a massive gap in my knowledge with fundamentals, because I put in a lot of time and effort to understand technicals. And any time I would make a devastating loss, it was always my lack of knowledge on fundamentals.
Right.
So that took me down the path of then actually, you know, paying institutional traders to help me. And, you know, really brushing up on that side of things. And now my biggest wins come from news days and making the most of the volatility that comes on those. So in a nice way, it worked out.
Yeah, I was going to say, nice balance there.
But also it's quite amazing that you realized where the mistakes were and what your downfalls were and that you then sought to rectify that, you know?
I'd say I had quite a few devastating losses before I realized. what is the common denominator by all these giant losses? And eventually I got there.
But were you, you're so making these giant losses, but I assume you're keeping your head above water with some wins at the same time.
Yeah. And I think that's what kept me motivated. I think for a long time, my technical analysis was very good, but technical analysis means absolutely nothing when there's a news event that comes out.
Absolutely.
So I think that's what was happening. I was making consistent wins and then I would lose on the news days. So I thought about not trading the news days, but then I thought, hang on a minute. What if I learned how to trade them?
Absolutely. And it's something that we advise people as well. Like if you're a raw beginner, like really don't trade on news days, stay away from them. So you realized this, but then you kept on trading on news days for a while by the sound of things. And at what point did you say, okay, I need to understand this? I mean, how long was it into your trading that you realized I need to get a mentor here. I need to get on top of this.
Shamefully long.
I think I can understand that. And then, I mean, it's about facing, you know, the worst side of it, right? Or facing what's bad and actually doing something about it. It's really tricky. And, you know, we were speaking before and I came from the other way, you know, and I understood economics and the fundamentals and found technical analysis a pretty bizarre world when I first encountered it and also bounced off it. I I had the arrogance or the overconfidence, you know, of assuming that I didn't want to, I didn't need technical analysis. So I understand that very, very much. But then, I mean, you said you did get a mentor. How did that happen? How did you go about doing that? And how beneficial was it for you?
Life-changing. I got a mentor. It was a guy called Patrick Reed, who I actually worked with on, we did an event together, like a trading event, which I was hosting. And we just stayed in contact after that. And I signed up to his program. And it was for 3 months, we went over the news events of that day. So in the morning, he would do this like a live room, in a sense, with everyone that signed up. And he would go over all of the macroeconomics for the day and what they were looking for and, you know, how to trade certain situations. And that made such a big difference to everything. It all started to click into place. And it just made me realize that, you know, how much you had to take each day on its individuality. You can't trade I mean, the same things happen at the same time every day. You know, you get the London Open, you get the New York Open, you get all these, the same things happen, but also you get different things that happen each day, and you have to take each day on its individuality.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing as well. I mean, there's so many moving parts in the fundamentals, you know, like, and how things influence each other. And then you've got the correlated assets. So it's quite a thing to learn. To know then how everything's going to, you know, what's going to affect you. And I'm assuming, were you trading currencies at that point?
Yeah. I was trading Forex at the time. Yeah, I've only recently, well, recently, in the last 2 years, I've moved on to indices more. But yeah, at the time it was Forex.
And were you, by this point, I mean, in your journey, you picked up some understanding of economics and fundamentals, I guess. Through your trading, did you find it difficult to pick it up, the fundamentals, or was it a fairly easy learning process for you?
Interesting question, actually, because I think I remember it differently to how I think I started off finding it difficult. I remember feeling a little bit lost at the beginning. I used to call them clever class. So I'd say I'm off to clever class. I don't really understand what they're talking about, but I think if I just keep turning up, eventually I'll get it. And then by the end of it, I felt like I was an expert in it. So it started off, I felt like they were talking a different language. I had no idea what was going on, but I just kept asking questions and kept showing up. And I think when you actually, and this is one of the great things about coaching and teaching other people, is when you start to retell information that you've learned, it sinks in for you a lot easier. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it started off difficult and then I ended up picking it up. But I also think that I think it can be taught very easily. I don't think it needs to be that complicated. So yeah, I think there's a very easy way to explain it to people.
Well, it sounds like you are very good at doing that then. Because you probably, you know, I think because you've gone through that process, you understand what people don't understand and what seems so foreign. And then you've probably developed a very, I don't want to use the word easy, but an easy way for them to understand it. As well, because you've been through the process yourself.
Yeah, I try my hardest to make everything as easy to understand as possible, because whilst there are people who come to me from a finance background and they tend to pick up things very, very quickly and easily, there is also a lot of people who, you know, have no finance background and don't understand any of the lingo or the jargon. And you have to I always think, and it's similar to journalism actually, where you have to try and tell a story like you're talking to a 12-year-old. So I try because, you know, you have to try and make it accessible to everyone. So yeah, I do try my hardest to make difficult or complicated subjects as easy to understand as possible. And I try and think of it like talking to a child.
Very good.
How would you explain this to a child?
So you went through this mentoring program and you came out the other side with a solid grasp of the fundamentals. And was this point that you transitioned from a part-time trader to a profession, well, to a full-time, or had you already quit your day job at this point?
No. So what actually happened was there was this pandemic.
There was. You remember that?
I remember it, yeah. It was about almost exactly four years ago now.
Yeah.
That kind of kick-started a bit of it, because I'd set up Trading Angel in 2019, and that was some unbelievably fortunate piece of luck that I'd done that just before it all kicked off. And then when we all got sent into lockdown and everyone was, you know, working less, I had already set up this business. I'd already set up Instagram pages. I'd already kickstarted everything. So that helped make it a soft launch.
Yeah, absolutely. Gosh, that is amazing, isn't it?
And at that point, I think, Caroline, so many people started getting into trading, hey?
Yeah.
Since they were locked down. Yeah. So they were like, how do I make money online?
Yeah. And also the rise of Zoom. No, that became a big thing, Zoom meetings. It all suddenly took off. I think it was something people maybe felt a tiny bit uncomfortable with before. Everyone liked to do things face to face, but then, you know, it became a lot more acceptable to do everything on Zoom.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that is really providential. So, so you set up Trading Angel, and then the pandemic hit. And I assume you were furloughed along with the rest of us.
No, because
you weren't.
Because I was a freelancer, and we slipped through the net. Gosh.
Yes,
through the net. Yeah,
you did. Awful. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
No, all right, it turned out okay. I'm all right.
Yeah, no, it turned out okay in the end.
Yeah, I've got support, and everything was okay, and but yeah, I suppose I was lucky in that sense. I'd already set up this business, so I'd already kick-started the process, and actually I was able to still work as a journalist because we were, what was it, on the exempt list, and I actually I got to drive into London whilst no one else was allowed to go out. It was a completely wild situation because I'd drive into London, no cars on the road. I would get to park for free in central London. And then I got to report on this huge event. And it was nice to be able to get out of the house as well. So I was still doing a couple of days a week doing that. So, yeah, it wasn't yeah, it worked out okay. It was okay. It was a soft launch, let's say.
A soft launch. Time.
Yeah.
And as Alison said, I mean, as we all know, trading in all forms, right, really exploded over the course of the pandemic. Did you see, you saw Trading Angel really pick up steam during the pandemic?
I suppose it was only starting out, so it's difficult to know it's difficult to know, I suppose, because it was only starting out anyway, so I didn't really have much prior experience to that. I don't know, to be honest. it could have been because of that, but I know that a lot of people were interested in it. The problem was as well that there was the rise in scams, and that made it seem a little bit dodgy in a way, and I had to fight my corner that I was genuine.
Yeah, it's something we talk and write a lot about and warn people about a lot. There's a huge, in the UK, it's UK is relatively good actually, but in South Africa and in some of the places where we work, in Malaysia and in Brazil, for instance, the amount of trading scams are just, it's unbelievable these days. And we keep a record. People get in touch with us who've been scammed, and it's just an absolute, it's incredible what people are getting away with these days. I find it's the confluence, unholy confluence of social media and crypto payments allows a lot of scammers to get away with a lot of things. So when you said you had to fight your corner, what were you up against?
Well, one thing obviously is that my pictures get taken and people make copycat sites pretending to be me. So I had people coming to me saying that, and I still get this, to be honest, I still get people coming to me saying that they got scammed or where's my money? And I said, I don't take investments, so I've never taken your money. And then they say, they show me the site and it was someone who'd taken my pictures. And it's very difficult because they feel angry at me because they feel like they gave me money, but they didn't. And it's very difficult for me to do anything about that other than to refer them to, the door. Yeah. So that was another reason, obviously, why I wanted to go into to take the qualifications, because I wanted to have some kind of, formal recognition in a world that had so many, scammers is the one thing as well. But also, unqualified. There's a lot of people that are also unqualified. So yeah, that's what led me down that path.
It's such a heartbreaking. You must also have these, you must also feel so sorry for these people. But as you say, there's just not much you can do about it. When I read some of these stories, it's absolutely heartbreaking. It makes me quite emotional. I just feel so sad for all these people.
It's people who are already vulnerable. It's people who are already scared because you're not going to. Yeah. And that's, they prey on that. So yeah, it's horrible. It's also quite difficult as well because I started to become aware that the scammers themselves were pretending to be victims as a way to scam me.
Right.
So they would say to me, so they would then try and blackmail me and say, oh, you've scammed me, you're responsible for this. And it occurred to me that actually, I think these were the people, these were actually scammers rather than victims, but they were pretending to be victims. I mean, I've got no evidence of that. It's just, it felt that way because things like they said, oh, you've taken a lot of money off me. I'd say, how much? And they would say, oh, I don't know, you know, like a lot. I'd say, well, if you've got scammed, you would know the exact amount to a penny.
But also, I mean, that's a scam I come across quite a lot, is where they write on our sites all the time. Hey, Chris.
Yeah, we get a lot of them.
If you have been scammed by this broker, and firstly, it's like a very well-regulated broker. So I already have a red flag as soon as I see that. Contact me. I was also scammed. I'll get your money back for you. And it's quite a common, it's just a common scam that we often come across.
Yeah, there's a story of that lady who got scammed on Instagram, lost a bunch of money, went onto Facebook and was complaining about this, met somebody who said they'd get their money back and then got scammed by them.
Oh, goodness.
Took away more money. Yeah, I know. It's outrageous. So, yeah, I mean, I can't imagine. But you seem so, but you said you fought your corner and you fended them off, but they're still coming.
Oh, they're still there. I mean, I've actually made one of my Instagrams, my personal Instagram, private now because it was just getting too much, all the people going through my contacts and my followers and asking them all for money.
Oh,
and it was
God.
All my friends. And so, you know, my friends, my family, people who actually know me, it's really embarrassing. Because they'll be messaging me and go, are you all right? Do you need money?
Yeah, and this is something we've talked about before on this podcast as well, is, I mean, the reputational problem that trading has, you know, and it's a lot of these guys and girls out there, you know, who do this, these scams, and it really drags the whole industry through the mud.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
Gives it such a bad name when it really doesn't deserve it once you get past it.
Yeah, and there's so many people out there who are genuinely trying to help, but it's difficult to distinguish.
It is. Do you find any stigma attached to your chosen profession now?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. I think, I mean, for a long time, people wouldn't take it seriously. So I used to get people belittling it, and I would always get, are you still doing that trading thing? I'd be like, what, my job? That trading thing, my job?
Yeah.
So I think, and then I would get also people, they would ask, is it not just all a big scam? And I'd say, you know, there are scammers, but the whole thing obviously isn't a scam. I mean, it's a high risk form of investing ultimately, isn't it? So
it
does need to be approached with caution. And there is evidence to suggest a lot of people don't succeed in it. But no, obviously it's not a scam.
No, it's like I tell people, you know, there's a reason why the biggest investment banks in the world do this, you know, in huge amounts of money. They do it because it makes money. They're not doing it for fun. Yeah, absolutely.
So if we just get back to your personal journey, can you talk us a little bit about your trading style? Like,
yeah,
I don't know, are you a day trader? Do you find yourself scalping more? Or do you hold positions sort of overnight, or do you hold longer term positions?
Well, okay, so my trading style's changed in the last couple years. So in the last 2 years, I've developed a new strategy, which is looking at the indices, and I would say it's day trading, but sometimes it ends up being scalping on a really good day when, you know, there's so much volatility, it just hits you, take profit. But obviously that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen every day that it goes that quickly. But yeah, on the whole, it's day trading. I don't like to hold trades overnight because I really value my sleep. And the best way to lose sleep is to hold a trade overnight. Holding it overnight kind of defeats, I guess, the strategy in itself and the plan, because I'm really looking for those big momentum moves at those key times of day. So I like to get in and out within the session. So I'm looking for the UK 100. There's usually around one momentum move in the London session, and that's what I'm looking for on that. And then for New York, I then look on the US 30 and the NASDAQ. And usually you can get two in New York session if you're patient. Okay. So I'm looking for those. There's usually one either on or around the open, or a news event if there is a news event. And then there's usually a period of consolidation and a second momentum move towards the end of the day. So okay. It's a long day.
It is a long day. Yeah.
What are your trading hours? I mean, obviously you're doing the UK Open and then the New York. So there's sort of 6 hours between the two opens, and then you're trading at the end of the New York session as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, overall it's a long day, but there are, the London opens for me in the UK at 8 o'clock. Occasionally there'll be a news release at 7, like the inflation news is worth getting up early for, because that usually has a big move at 7. But other than that, yeah, it's looking for that momentum move. Sometimes it happens straight away. If there's a lot of momentum, then it will happen straight away, which is obviously the best case scenario, because then you can be in and out, and you've in and out of that session, and you can have a bit of a break. The late morning tends to be the best time for me to go to the gym or to do anything else, any of my errands or any other bits that I need to get done before New York then opens. Then I'll do the New York Open at 2:30, but I'll get to my trading desk. So I'll start working from 2 o'clock, unless it's a news day and there's news out at 1:30.
Yes, of course. Okay. And what are your, what is your approach? You said you obviously, trade the opens and breakouts. And tell us a bit about your SMC sort of strategy.
Yeah, so the SMC, I suppose, relates to the technical analysis part. So the technical analysis part is largely based off the SMC concepts, but I do add a little bit of my own twist on it, because there's also, I look at momentum as well, which is a big thing. It's a big part of the strategy for a lot of reasons. A, there's no point. I don't like to trade when it's just going up, when it's just chopping up and down, because you don't get as good risk to reward ratio. And you also don't get that instant feedback, which is nice to get.
Your psychology, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think, when I was a younger trader, I was holding weak trades for too long. And it would cause me to move my stop loss and do all sorts of stupid things. And now I realize that actually, if you trade that momentum, if you're going for those big moves, when they're happening, then you do get that almost instant feedback. And it's quite clear if you are in a good trade or one that's worth holding. If it's hanging around too long at entry or going against you, then you don't have momentum. it doesn't work. Yeah. I use the SMC as the technical analysis with tied in with a little bit of momentum as well. But I also,
sorry, Caroline, just to interject there, can you just explain to our listeners the SMC, just for people who don't know what SMC stands for, and break it down a bit for us, if you don't mind?
No, that's fine. So SMC, based to my understanding, stands for Smart Money Concepts. And I believe it was inspired by the teachings of ICT. I think that's the origin. He gets credited for SMC if it wasn't him. and he was an institutional trader who's got a very popular YouTube channel. And he teaches from that side of it. I know that there's people who argue against it and say that it's not what he says it is, but for whatever reason, the patterns that he explains do show up. So I think that it is quite a helpful resource to sort of identify these certain patterns that show up. He talks a lot about stop hunting, and he calls it liquidity grabbing. So it's the idea that the institutional traders are moving the markets to where they think that there's going to be a lot of stop losses, to where they think that there's going to be a lot of easy money. I have spoken to other institutional traders who say that's not true. No one cares.
But it keeps on happening, though. But you see the patterns.
You do see them. So, you know, I think whether it's for that reason, even if it's not for that reason, but you apply a story that makes sense to you, if it helps your trading, it works, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say, whether there's a conspiracy out or not, if there's a pattern worth looking at, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, but that's the SMC. There's a lot of elements to it. So those liquidity grabs, pretty much it's a spike in the opposite direction. So say if you've got a buy position, it would be a spike that hits your stop loss, a spike down that hits your stop loss before then going up. So it's like you got the direction right, but you got stopped out. Yes. And I know a lot of new traders will probably...
But it's so frustrating.
So frustrating, yeah.
Yeah.
And he teaches how to overcome that. So how to wait for those to happen, how to identify that that might happen, and how to wait for it to happen before you enter. So those sorts of things is SMC style.
Very cool. I think that's very helpful. Thank you, Caroline.
You're welcome.
So what, like, you know, just based on this, what advice do you have for beginners then trying to manage their risk?
Best advice that I could give a beginner is keep your lot size tiny because you can still get there is nothing that's going to get you to learn how to trade other than trading and practicing, being involved, having real money on the line. So you can read as many books as you like, but you will learn the fastest by doing. But you don't have to have big lot sizes. You can keep it very, 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 very small. That's the best thing, you know, if you're new, but also always have stop loss. Everyone knows that. And also if there's too much volatility, like I was saying earlier, if the market's going up and down, there are some situations where you shouldn't actually be trading at all. And to be able to identify those as quickly as possible and to step out, is quite important. So if the market's going up and down in each candle, is got a higher pip value than your maximum stop loss, then it's almost impossible to get into a trade. So those are days, I call them untradeables. And yes. I say that those are the ones to sit out on.
Yeah, that's very, very good advice, Caroline. Thank you. Yeah, I think, you know, we always talk about the stop losses and obviously making sure that you don't move your stop loss,
yeah.
you know, once you've done your analysis. But yeah, I think probably more important, as you say, is having that very small lot size when you're starting out.
It's helpful because you still get to trade, and that helps you to learn.
Yeah, we were talking about this the other day, weren't we? The importance of live trading versus a demo account, and how it actually might be beneficial to, as you say, trade with tiny lot sizes and actually risk some money, so you actually get the feeling of the of having a live trade out there, which you don't get with the demo account.
Yeah, absolutely. It's famously everyone thinks that they're an excellent trader on demo. Uh-huh. Everyone gets rich on demo.
Yeah, they do. And then when you get the real thing, it's a very different.
Oh my goodness, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, closing trades too early is one of the biggest missed opportunities with the new traders as well. And missing opportunities is a big part of, I guess, something that I review in my own analysis. You know, I do what have I done well? What can I do more of? What have I done badly? What can I do less of? And where are my missed opportunities? And I think for a lot of new traders, it's coming out of trades too early and taking too smaller wins when actually they could have got more out of it. And that is to do with that fear that, oh, I've made some money. I don't want it to go back against me now.
Yeah.
I don't want to lose the money I've made.
So, but as you say, if you've got the smaller lot size, then you're sort of a little bit freer to, you know, go with that trend, or, you know, to let the trade run a bit longer. To hit your profit target.
I think the small lot size helps with people. It helps in some ways. I think there is a hindrance at some point. You do have to increase it after a certain time. So once you do get the feel for it, because I also hear people talking about the boredom of using too small a lot size after too long. And then they're not taking it seriously. And then they're placing too many trades because they're not taking each one seriously enough. So there is obviously a downside to that. But yeah, I think when you first start, just keep those lot sizes small and then increase them at a manageable pace.
How would you sort of suggest people do increase, you know, at what point, sort of once they're consistently profitable or, you know, a certain percent?
I think sometimes, usually what I do when I work with people, we usually do a bit of a rotation, like a skill rotation. So usually there'll be something really obvious that is a problem and that needs attention. So we work on that, you know, for a week or 2 weeks, or, you know, practice a certain thing. And then you can do a bit of a rotation. So once you've actually then managed that area of it, say, for example, it's taking, you know, it's doing too big a lot size, or, you know, you work on keeping your lot sizes small, or if it's taking too big a stop loss, work on keeping it tighter, or if it's not holding trades, you know, make a game so that you're making points if you hold it for till the end. But once you've then worked on that skill, you can then rotate and move on to something else. So I guess it's part of a prioritizing as well. So what's the biggest problem? For each person, it's going to be a different thing, you know, the thing that they need to prioritize and need to work around. So usually you have to, what's it like having a bucket with holes in it? You just need to, you need to fill those holes. If they're making big losses, just let's sort those out quickly. And then you can move on to missed opportunities once you've filled those.
I guess this is the benefit of having a coach, is that because you've also worked with so many people, you can really identify those patterns, you know, where they're going wrong.
I feel like it does come, that side of it comes quite naturally for me. I can see now where people are struggling. Usually they can tell me as well. So people have a lot of insight into their own trading, even though they don't necessarily know how to stop it. They know what they're doing wrong. Okay. So I get over trading all the time. That's one of the biggest ones I get.
Of course.
But I would say that is a benefit to having a coach, is that it's someone that can help you work through all the issues. Some of them you're going to be aware of, and some of them you're not even going to be aware of. So sometimes you need to be pointed in the right direction. And a lot of people just need a bit of accountability as well, especially with overtrading.
Yeah. No, it is. It's probably the biggest problem. And it's something we were talking about a couple episodes ago with the rise of trading apps. I mean, it really drives people into overtrading. Well, it doesn't drive them into it, but it allows overtrading, especially for beginners. Who maybe don't have a desktop setup, you know, and they're just trading on their phone anyway. They're sitting on their bus or whatever, and
end up, exactly.
You know, real
rule number one: don't trade on the bus.
Yeah, indeed.
Or in the pub.
It was one of, when we record that, Alison, I think a couple episodes ago, you know, and we were saying, I think the end, our conclusion was like, really just try not to trade on your phone. You know, just don't do it.
Always trade at your desk.
Yeah. It's okay for monitoring trades, but people do tend to overtrade. So, I mean, about as being a coach, I mean, do you coach beginners or more intermediate advanced traders? I mean, is it a mix?
Big mix. I get people coming to me at all levels. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I've had full-time traders who only trade and they've maybe gone through a bit of a bad patch. I've had traders who are still having, you know, they've come to me even though they're doing well and they just want to learn a new skill or a new strategy. And I also get complete beginners. So yeah, a big mix there, which is nice.
Yeah, I know, I bet this.
Yeah, you get something from everyone because, I mean, it's really rewarding. It's really rewarding when people pick it up easy. So if, you know, there's a full-time trader, they sometimes only need a couple sessions to get back on track because they know most of it already. But then there's something really rewarding as well about, you know, someone coming to you not having known anything at all. And then getting them the first win, it's really fun.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. It's yeah, it must be really rewarding. Do you have people come to you who you just like, no, you're not suitable? Like, I mean, you can't trade, or do you think that's a myth?
Do you know what? I don't think I've had that yet, but that doesn't mean that I won't. I think I do pick up quite quick. Do you know what? I can actually tell. I've worked with so many people now that I can tell just from their email, their initial email, whether it's going to work out or not. Mm-hmm. So I think it never really progresses past that. You can usually, when it's going to work out, they have a lot of in-depth questions, and I can just tell that they're in the right headspace for it.
Right, of course.
And I think it doesn't really, it doesn't tend to progress to the point where we actually have a meeting and get it all set up if they aren't, you know, if it's everything's very vague.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I just automatically weed people out through that process. But I find that virtually everyone that's come to me has been very intelligent, even if they don't credit themselves for it. I can see it. I feel like they're intelligent. And yeah, and I like them all. They're all good people.
That's great. That's really important. And is there a particular methodology you have for your coaching?
I suppose it depends what stage people come to me at, but I have a lot of cheat sheets and checklists, and I have so many printables because I think it's, yeah, I mean, my whole philosophy is to try and save people as much time, try to make things as easy to understand as possible, and take out all of the guesswork. So the whole reason why people come to a coach and ask for a coach's help is because they want someone to do the work for them. They want to be put in, you know, they don't want to guess. They want someone to structure things. So I have a lot of cheat sheets, checklists, printables, things to help them, guides, all of that. So it really depends what stage people are at as to, you know, where we start with. But I don't know if I don't know if that answers the methodology question, but
no, it does. I think it's really, yeah. I mean, no, of course, I don't think a professional trainer is going to need a cheat sheet, or maybe they do. I don't know, but
oh, yeah. Everyone loves a cheat sheet.
Everybody loves a cheat sheet, but I can imagine for beginners coming in, especially, you know, that's really useful. It really gives them a confidence boost to have checklists and cheat sheets and. I saw in one of your videos where you talked about your trading journey, you were talking about that you've got your sheets up on the wall with the opening times of the markets, and that you know, and that kind of thing, I think, must be really beneficial for beginners.
Oh, my key times of day cheat sheet.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah. Everyone loves that one. Yeah. I think sometimes, yeah. Do you know what? I think one of the biggest things is sometimes people come into it and there's so much to learn. And even though it's really obvious once you say it, sometimes you just need someone to say it and put it in a really obvious, structured format for them. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, when you look at that, it's really obvious. You know, everyone knows London opens at 8 in the UK, but sometimes just having it on paper and to be like, this is a key time of day. Mm-hmm. This is when you want to be looking for a trade.
Yeah. No, it is good. And I mean, do you find that, I mean, you said that you also coach, you know, professional traders and more experienced traders. Do you find that there's ingrained mistakes that professional traders and more experienced traders make? And are they the same kind of mistakes that you see over and over again? Well, I guess what I'm asking is there something that, you know, for more experienced traders listening to this, you know, is it something that you see a lot, you see quite often coming up that you think that you have to coach out of them? Well, not necessarily coach out of them, but help them with.
I think that one thing I see quite a lot is getting really obsessive about technicals.
Right.
And yeah, that I do see that quite a lot. So getting really hung up on certain patterns and certain technical aspects. So thinking that the market has to come back to this point, or it has to go, this has to be my entry, this is the exact point. And actually, sometimes you have to, you know, just go with what the market gives you. You know, sometimes you get a textbook set up and sometimes it's a little bit weird. And you just kind of have to go with it. You never know which one you're going to get, and you have to be nimble sometimes. It's like a break and retest. Sometimes you get the retest and sometimes you don't. But if you're hung up on only entering on the retest, you'll miss a big break, a big momentum move.
Yeah. Really interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, we do see this, and I think it's something we've talked about as well, Alison, as you say, like people, and I think probably not just more experienced traders, I think beginners as well, when they're learning technical analysis and they're getting really into it. Mm. You see some of the charts they come up with just absolutely smothered in indicators. And you're like, how can you see what's going on behind all this?
Yeah. New traders love technical indicators, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah. It's great. And I mean this might be a tricky question, but maybe I'm going to put you on the spot here, but what's the single most important piece of advice you would give to a trader who'd come to you?
The single most important bit of advice. I'm tempted to say understand fundamentals.
Good.
I mean, I guess that's because that was the biggest pivot in my personal journey. And also, I suppose when I teach other people and they pick that up after being obsessed with technicals, they kind of realize how it all ties in and how you do need to know both. Also, I think it's really important for each day. It helps you to manage the day because you obviously get news releases at different times. And if you look at that day on its individual merits, then you can kind of figure out where you might get moves, and also when you might not want to trade. So yeah, I'd say just being really aware of that is helpful.
I think that's a fantastic advice. And then, I mean, you mentioned, I think, that you're studying to become a financial advisor in the UK. What brought that about?
It's ridiculous. The very first reason that I decided to do it was because I had to put a disclaimer up on my YouTube channel saying I am not a financial advisor. And I thought, I don't want to have that up anymore. I want to have an official qualification. I don't want to disclaim people before they've even watched my video. So that kick-started the idea that maybe I should have an official qualification. There was, you know, again, it's people, there's so many unqualified people in this industry. Mm-hmm. And I wanted, I suppose, you know, I've built a business, a whole business around trading. And I wanted to have, an official qualification. I didn't want to have that disclaimer up.
It's a lot of work to get rid of a bit of text.
Yeah, oh my goodness, the exams are so intense. They are so intense. So yeah, it's a lot of work. I realize I do think it's ridiculous now. Every time I get through another assignment, I wonder why I'm doing this. But actually, another reason is a lot of the people, when I coach them, they come to me and I get asked every question. I get asked questions about, you know, not only do they ask questions about trading, but they're wanting divorce advice. They're wanting mortgage advice. Wanting inheritance tax advice. So everyone comes to me for everything. And I think, do you know what? It'd be really cool if I could actually help you on this rather than telling you I can't.
Yeah, and I guess that brings me to my next question. I mean, where are you going to go with this? Because, I mean, as you say, you can offer advice on all kinds of aspects of wealth now going forward. Is that something that interests you, moving away from trading and into becoming a financial advisor?
Well, I'm going to, whether this is ridiculous or not, I'm going to try and manage both of them because I feel emotionally attached to Trading Angel.
Right.
It's my baby company that I grew, and I feel very proud of it. I feel very happy with it, and I love coaching. I love trading. But do you know what? I want to add to it. I want to build on it. I want to also be able to help other people in other areas as well. So Trading Angel is going to get a sister company.
Oh, fantastic.
And so when I have my final when I pass my final exam. Mm-hmm. Feels like they never end, but when it happens, I will launch a sister company for Trading Angel, and I'll try and run the both of them. But I might need some help. I might need to hire some people.
Yeah, you might. Well, very good luck, Caroline. I mean, that's fantastic news. Yeah, good for you.
That's such an inspiring story, Caroline, really.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. But on that note, you know, we mentioned last week, was it the beginning of the year?
I think it was the first podcast of the year, yeah.
Yes, it was, about women in trading and the gender gap. And we spoke about how differently men and women approach trading, that women are naturally more cautious and sort of risk averse. And obviously, you know, the big guys in trading are very rarely women, unfortunately. But what we found is even though they make less money, they lose less money, according to statistics. So that's very interesting. So it's just exciting from that point of view that you are, you know, really diving headfirst into this world, just because, you know, women, I think we said before that women only make up about 14% of people who work in the finance sector. So it's fantastic to hear that you're really taking the bull by the horns here. And covering all bases. It's very inspiring. But having said that, like, what was your experience as a woman in trading? I mean, have you felt that it might be different for you as a woman than it might be for say, other people that you know in trading that are men?
To be completely honest, whilst I know the statistics say that there is this big gap between the genders, and I know that is obviously a true fact, my honest feeling, I am a very glass half full type person, but my honest feeling is that I haven't felt disadvantaged. Perhaps I'm lucky that everyone's being more aware of that gender pay gap these days, and perhaps it's a time, you know, now is a good time to be a woman in finance, because it's more aware of it. The other thing is also I built a company, and obviously I'm going to hire myself. I didn't discriminate me for being a woman. I've never tried to get a job with anyone else as a female in finance, so who knows?
I am aware
that a lot of women that I've spoken to as traders have different stories to me, and they've got different experiences. So I wouldn't want to belittle anyone else's experience with it, because I know a lot of women do feel like they have had a massive disadvantage, or they've been in situations that they feel very uncomfortable with. But I guess from my own experience, because it's my company and I haven't really, you know, I can pay myself whatever I like. So
I think it's very important what you mentioned earlier, you know, just now, is that I think the younger generations don't experience as much, they sort of have an easier into the finance world than maybe previous generations. That's the point that you raise. But it's great that you haven't experienced that. It means that maybe there is some change that's happening, you know.
I mean, it's possible I have been disadvantaged. I've just been blissfully unaware of it.
Gosh.
Well, then I wouldn't say you're a glass half. Did you say a glass half empty or glass half full?
I'm glass half full. I've always been an eternal optimist.
Positive, yes, of course. Sorry, for some reason I thought you said empty, and I was like, no.
I might have done. I might have said that by accident, but I meant full.
Yeah, no, you definitely are. You're a very positive, presence.
Thank you.
Do you find? I mean, you coach men and women. Do you find that men and women traders sort of trade differently? Have you noticed a difference? Or
honestly, I know the statistics say a certain thing. So it's possible that the people who've come to me, it's possible that the people who approach me for coaching are a certain type of people. So it's not a fair representation of like a full cross section of traders. But I would say that I haven't noticed a gender difference. There are a lot of men who have incredible attention to detail and are so precise and careful, which I guess you would stereotypically assume was a female trait.
Yeah.
And then there are women who are completely reckless, but also the other way around as well. There are women who have great attention to detail, who ask, I see both on both sides. So okay. I haven't noticed a difference, but also, as I say, it could be that the people who go for coaching are a certain type of person anyway. So I would say someone who's looking for coaching is probably someone who likes efficiency. Who likes to do things in a certain way, who likes to seek out help. So, yeah, it might not be a fair cross-section.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good answer. That's a very, very – because I think we also are bombarded with this whole thing between men and women. And, it's also nice to see that other side that you don't notice that yourself. So that's also a good perspective. We spoke earlier that you said that you have just hired your first employee.
Yeah. Yeah. It felt like a big moment.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I was so excited.
That's wonderful.
It's a trading angel coachee. Is that the right word? So someone who's been through the Trading Angel coaching program, who I've coached, has recently he was looking to leave his full-time job and wanted to trade full-time. And then it happened. And he's been getting prop firm payouts, and he's been getting regular prop firm payouts and big ones as well. And I'm so inspired and so over the moon by how well he's doing that I decided to hire him as the Trading Angel prop firm coach, so he can help other people make that same transformation.
Congratulations. That's absolutely amazing.
Thank you. And
congratulations to them as well.
Yeah. And nothing makes me happier than when someone reaches their goals. It's the best feeling in the world. And it's so nice to see, especially when someone's been feeling worn down by their 9-to-5 and been wanting it and working hard for so long. It's a very exciting moment.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's really good. Well, Caroline, and is there anything else you wanted to ask Alison?
Oh, sorry. Caroline won't ask me anything.
I've got loads to ask you, yeah.
I think we might ask your employee for an interview as well and to hear their story.
I'm sure he would love to.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. But I think we've covered everything we that I had sort of running through my mind. But I don't know. Is anything from your side, Chris?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's been, I just wanted to say, as Alison said, it's been really just inspiring listening to you talk, Caroline. And I think a lot of traders, and what I love about your story is that it starts with this chaos, as you said at the beginning, in this naivety, and it's grown into this wonderful story where it's changed, completely altered your life. And now you're helping other people alter their lives, it's a wonderful story. And as we were talking, earlier about all these scams, there's so many bad stories in trading. And so it's really nice to hear such a wonderful story.
Thank you.
So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
For coming on.
And we wish you all the success, in the future with your... is it a diploma? Hey,
it's called a DIPFA. So I get to put that after my name, which isn't very catchy.
It isn't.
Caroline Mundell DIPFA.
Trading Angel.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. But it's been absolutely wonderful chatting to you, and I just feel so inspired. It's been a wonderful, wonderful talk. Thank you, Karina.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been great to talk to you guys and to meet you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Well, Caroline, go on, Alison. Yes.
No, I was saying I hope we keep in touch.
Yes, absolutely.
I was going to say, we will do this again. Yeah, we should have you on, and see how you're getting on. When are you planning to get your diploma?
I'm hoping to pass. I plan to pass at the end of May.
End of May.
Okay. So that's not too long away now.
It isn't. That's very close. No, we'll definitely, let's get you back on after that.
I would love that.
And we can hear about the next stage in your adventures.
Yes, sounds good. I would love that.
Super. Mm. Well, Caroline, thank you so much again for coming on.
Thank you.
All right. Have a lovely evening.
You too.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.